Hey, welcome back to the Football Diary podcast in another full week of Premier League action. And the table seems to be taking shape now. Most teams seem to have played about 11 or 12 games, I think it is. And only 5 points separate 10th place from the bottom of the table. So it's really tight and congested down there. And up at the top, we've got, I think, Fulham making a real show of it. They're seventh and it looks like they're sticking in that position as well, which is really impressive for them. United and Chelsea played at a 1-1 draw as they sit fifth and sixth currently. And Newcastle have found themselves in the top four after their impressive win away at Tottenham. And that is where we're going to start today's proceedings, Dave. First of all, how are you, mate? How have you found this busy packed fixture weekend of football? Not just the weekend, but the whole week, actually, wasn't it?
It's hard to know where to look first, isn't it, with so many games?
It's interesting because there's going to be a lot of football, isn't there, over the next few weeks with the World Cup on the horizon as well. So it'll be a challenge keeping up on top of it, I think, as a podcast, definitely. But we'll focus our attention on just the weekend so far this week, Dave, because I think there's been so much football we could easily lose focus. So Newcastle United beat Spurs away 2-1. Really impressive win. But I think this is probably the first time I've seen Newcastle and I thought, do you know what? They could actually compete with the top six this time around. And that's probably a bit earlier than I assumed that they might compete at this level. What did you make of Newcastle and also Spurs as well on the back of that?
Yeah, I think Newcastle in particular, we've seen a few performances this season probably where they've not actually managed to get what they deserve. Specifically the Liverpool game where I thought they were so unfortunate not to get at least a point, if not win, that I thought they were a better team. That was quite early on in the season and we've seen them, you know, pick up points against United, City as well. So they've shown they're no pushovers. And I think you've got to look at that. I think the style of play has changed massively, particularly from obviously the start of last season. Guimaraes has been a big part of that. I think looking at how they dominated this game against Spurs as well was real eye-opening for them. I think what was nice to see is that they're not just, we've seen them be quite direct in the past and it's been the complete opposite. They've actually been, you know, moving the ball well around, obviously Guimaraes being a big part of that, but Almiron, another player who's stepped up, while obviously Isak's been injured, which they've needed. And the only thing you can see probably holding them back is probably squad depth, which they don't have probably enough. Because I see a lot of people thinking, you know, can they step up and potentially transfer top four? I think they're a bit away off that at the moment. But yeah, obviously Spurs, they're just a tough watch. A real tough watch. I was watching this game and I was mainly focused on Newcastle and like I had a lot of admiration the way it went about this game, the intensity they had, you know, off the ball and on the ball. It was just a completely different level to what Spurs showed. They were obviously last week against United, they were poor. United really, really good, but they probably didn't get on the ball as much as they would have liked to. United didn't give them a sniff. But in this game, even when Spurs were on the ball, they were awful. And I sympathise a little bit with Tottenham fans because you don't want to watch that. That's, you know, I mean, we've gone through it as United fans under Mourinho, but even our football then wasn't this bad. And I think it's worrying for me. Conte is saying we're two or three windows away from being where we want to be. And that, for me, is worrying, especially because the likes of Harry Kane and Heung-min Son don't want to be waiting two or three more transfer windows for them to turn it around.
Yeah, I agree. I think with Spurs, though, they were contained quite nicely by the Newcastle defence. And I think that's probably one of the areas where Newcastle have really improved. Nick Pope's made some really good saves. And he's probably England's maybe second choice goalkeeper now, I think. He's overtaken Ramsdale, probably in my eyes, just because of the exposure he's had in the Newcastle team. But they've had, obviously, Sven Botman's been a real upgrade for them. Dan Burn and Kieran Trippier look like, you know, really experienced professional heads. So there's a calmness in defence. And they did keep Son and Kane under wraps quite comfortably, as did United as well, to be fair, in the previous game they played. So defensively, I thought Newcastle were good, but I think Callum Wilson's probably one of these outside bets for the England World Cup squad, isn't he? His goal was a little bit contentious, it's fair to say, in some people's eyes. Hugo Lloris comes out to clear a ball. I don't know what was he trying to do, but he came well out of his 18-yard box. Callum Wilson came to meet him, and the keeper didn't clear. Wilson basically stood his ground, didn't he? Took the ball off him and looped it over the top of him, scored a really well-taken goal. I don't see any issue with that, Dave. What did you make of it?
I mean, with what VAR thrown up over the last few weeks, couple of months in particular, you were kind of expecting it to get overturned, weren't you? You were waiting them to just literally disallow it. And thankfully, they've come to the right decision. Yeah, there was nothing wrong with that goal, in my opinion. I just think, particularly, obviously, you're getting goalkeepers. You just get a bit too much protection these days in certain situations. And yeah, I was happy to see this one allowed. And they got this decision right for me. And yeah, like you mentioned there, Callum Wilson is really, really stepping up when Newcastle need him.
Yeah, it's funny because I think Gareth Southgate's going to announce, is it a 55-man provisional squad anytime soon? So it's going to be a huge initial one. And he's probably going to be on that list, isn't he, Callum Wilson? But whether he makes the final cut, we'll see. But yeah, positives for Newcastle, I think, and going into the top four for the first time, I think, in a long, long time. I don't remember seeing Newcastle this high in the table, but also competing for top four at the moment are obviously Chelsea and Manchester United. And they played out a really entertaining draw, actually, in a real test of tactics of Graham Potter and Erik ten Hag. And it started, interestingly enough, and they were cancelling each other out for a while. And Potter made a switch quite early on in the game, didn't he, where he brought on an extra midfielder in Kovacic just to cancel out United a little bit. And it did even up the numbers in the middle of the park. And it was kind of fascinating to see how both managers reacted to each other's teams. And when the breakthrough was made, even with Chelsea's goal, obviously, it was almost like United knew that they could still find an extra gear to get an equaliser, because they're in the game and probably in control of the game for the majority, weren't they, United?
Yeah, I think they can count themselves unlucky not to have, you know, been winning at that stage. They certainly deserved to go in half-time leading, in my opinion, and they had the best chances in the game. Two in particular, Rashford with that 1-1, which, you know, he should really be scoring in a prolific number nine. You've got to say United are probably scoring more goals than they are at the minute. But obviously they don't have that. And Antony, just before half time, he had a 1v1, obviously on his weaker right foot, which he should have been at least getting on target. So I think United will definitely be looking at this. And obviously you're saying, you know, they should be scoring more goals, that they are having their chances. Yeah. I think the encouraging thing that Ten Hag will be looking at is they're actually starting to dominate games, particularly in the bigger games. We're having more possession. We're creating more meaningful chances as well. And it, all the signs point to, you know, a good level of progression. I'm certainly happy as a United fan from what I'm seeing, that, you know, the football that's on show, it might not be as consistent as we like it to be at times. As we've seen, we thought we were on a good run. Obviously, had a little bit of a slip up against Newcastle. Should have won that game. Another more missed chances again. But yeah, I'm more than happy with what I've been seeing from United. Chelsea, yeah, you mentioned that tactical tweak that they made. It's almost... That's quite encouraging from a Chelsea fan, is that Potter is obviously, he's willing to change things as soon as he realises something isn't right. Sometimes you see managers make changes at half time, don't you? But he knew it wasn't, you know, the game wasn't in their favour. It only looked a matter of time before United had scored. So fair play to him on that hand that he made that decision. And just that 10, 15 minutes before half time, Chelsea did make a couple of sort of moments where they looked a lot more positive. Yeah. But yeah, you know, I think that they were fortunate really to have taken that lead, that 1-0 lead. The penalty, it was just a ridiculous moment from Scott McTominay. I don't really know what he was thinking. It was quite funny because obviously he only just came on before that, didn't he? Ten Hag obviously brought him on, and you know, that brain fart cost United. It looked like they were going to lose. And fair play that you saw the character that this team have got, United, that they obviously don't give up and fight until the end. And I'm sure the manager will be pleased with that.
Yeah, I think one thing I've noticed about the last couple of games United have played, I think it's just been the amount of chances we've been encouraged to take. And the amount of shots we've had, whether they're on target or not, is something that I've not seen United do for a while. They've almost been like quite kind of reluctant to take a shot for fear of wasting possession. But we peppered the goal with chances, didn't we? And I think, like you say, we're just short of a quality finisher at the moment, or a confident finisher at least, to just put them away. And that's encouraging. I think as fans, you want to see like incremental growth in your team and them getting better every single game, even slightly. And I think United have frustrated a bit in games like Nicosia times two. That was a bit of a frustrating watch. Newcastle obviously was a difficult draw to watch as well. But Chelsea and Spurs were both games where I think United absolutely dominated. And our record against the top six teams has been really good so far this season. I think the fixture list looks pretty kind for United now as well. So that's encouraging. Another word quickly on United's professionalism as well. Because, I mean, the amount of players that you saw really galvanising each other, and the likes of Casemiro celebrating his winning goal, and Antony really fist pumping, and Dallo getting involved. The players look united, don't they? Which is it's been a while since we've seen that.
Yeah, the celebrations at the end, you know, were brilliant to see how much it meant to everyone. Casemiro, a player of his ability, even with the amount that he's won, just goes to show he's still, you know, he still wants to win at all costs. And he's been so good. He's been unlucky, actually, the last few games to not have scored already. He's had a few chances where he's looked like, you know, you look back and you think maybe he could have done better there. But it's been fine margins, and he's finally got his first goal. And I think he was a missing piece for me. I think one thing as well, it looks like Varane's injured. I'm not sure for how long, but the positive for me is that we have that piece in place in front of the back four now, if we do have a slightly weaker defence, because we know that's the partnership that, you know, United have looked their best at with Martinez and Varane. If it's going to be Lindelof and Martinez, then we've now got Casemiro in there to, you know, to intercept, make interceptions, break up plays. He's been phenomenal, particularly in his last two or three games. So, they look a real unit. They look like they're really working for each other now, which is not something we've been able to say in the past. But you have to say, if it wasn't for those first nightmare couple of games at the start of the season, wondering where they could be. But I think that can only be encouraging, especially to see how they're performing against the best teams as well.
Yeah, it's definitely encouraging. I think the fixture list is going to play out, like you say, a little bit better now. So hopefully we'll see that dominance kind of come into goals, into some convincing wins, because we haven't seen United win convincingly for a while either. So fingers crossed that's kickstart something. But where will Cristiano Ronaldo fit into this now, Dave? What do you see his future looking like?
I think the club probably wanted to get him out, you know, at the end of the summer window, whatever reason that didn't happen, whether there were enough suitors for him, or, you know, teams that he didn't want to go to. I mean, we heard that he could have potentially gone to Al Hilal, which is, you couldn't really see him going there. But it's just whether a team comes in for him and he's happy to go there. I feel like that's the only thing that's stopping him from leaving the club.
There's been talk of cancelling his contract as well.
Well, yeah, you can't see him doing that, though. What's he on? £500,000 a week, I think. I think he got fined £1 million, apparently. So that equates to 2 weeks, you know, wage, which sounds about right for obviously his actions. It's about who's willing to pay that, you know, that sort of wage, which is ridiculous as well, especially for obviously a man, you know, of his age. Even though we know what he's capable, he's not obviously what he was, but he's still capable of moments. But we've shown that we're a better team without him, and that's, you know, as a United fan, that's we really need to be looking forward now.
So from one team that's kind of fading out its icons to another team really that's still trying to rely on its icons to galvanise them, which is Liverpool. And they're looking really like they need something to kickstart their season. I thought the City win might have been it, Dave, but they go to Forest away and lose 1-0. Bottom of the table, Nottingham Forest, which was a great, really determined performance from them. But Liverpool, they were so lacking ideas, weren't they? Didn't look like anything like the team that sort of saw City away. And tactically, were matching that particular team for the whole game. In this particular game, they had no answers to Forest's really resolute defence, did they?
No. Their most positive moments came from set pieces, really. Van Dijk had a couple of great opportunities. It was almost like he tried to clear the ball rather than score. I think there was one where he had a header where he could have scored point blank, and he decided to knock it back across the goal, and there was no one really at the back post. And he had another one where it was quite clear. I mean, on another day, it could have been 3-3 because Forest had plenty of chances themselves on the break. And that's, I think, where it's going to come down to with Forest for me, whether they can stay up or not, is whether they can be clinical enough. And they've struggled to score goals. Obviously, they've let plenty of goals in, which is obviously another problem, whether obviously Steve Cooper can find a remedy for that. It's something that they need to fix quickly. It's not easy, obviously, with the amount of players that they've brought in. But they don't have time in this league. Hopefully, I mean, there were a few positive sort of encouraging things, I think, in this game. Typical that a former Liverpool academy graduate was to score against them. He struggled in the last few games as well. But that would have meant so much that they were able to hold on to that result. That must just do so much for them. They need to carry that momentum into the rest of the season. But Liverpool, they've shown that they really struggle, particularly when they've not got Thiago in that midfield. Forest just looked like they wanted it more than Liverpool. The intensity was better from them. Obviously, chasing 50-50s and coming out with the ball a lot easier. And it's got to be worrying for Klopp, definitely. Especially coming on the back of a game where you've beat Man City, the best team in the league. You've obviously had another good result midweek against West Ham, albeit probably not as convincing. They've had this momentum and it's gone again. Another worry for me is Fabinho. He's not looked quite like his former self. And I think Klopp
Their midfield is quite light anyway, because I looked at their lineup and they had, Curtis Jones, Harvey Elliott, Fabinho. And I'm thinking that's such a lightweight midfield. And obviously at right back, they replaced Trent Alexander-Arnold with James Milner as well. So their strength in depth seems like something to be worried about, but in particular in midfield. And if someone like Fabinho is not on his game, you really can tell, can't you?
Yeah, it's a strange one, isn't it? Because, he's been a key player for them over the last couple of years. Why? He's just a player that's out of form at the moment. And that must be a reason why, obviously, he's not been starting him. And he's dropped him for a few games. Fans have been pondering, saying, why is Fabinho not starting? And, they've got their answer. Yeah. They've seen that he's not looked like his usual self, as have obviously a lot of players in that team. And it's just whether they're going to be able to go on a run. They need some sort of consistency, but they've not found it at the moment.
I think Liverpool are looking for momentum, but I think Forest as well equally have to build on this result, because that's the first win in a while. But they've got Arsenal next, I think, followed by Brentford. So it's a really tough next couple of games for them. And then there's a brief break for the Cup, I think, as well, isn't it? The League Cup after that. So yeah, lots of important games coming up for Forest. Momentum to build on there, because they're still bottom despite this result. Only just, mind you, just on goal difference. Leicester have taken themselves out of the relegation zone just like that with a win over Wolves as well. Not just any old win, but a 4-0 thumping on their turf. Now, Wolves are in a bit of disarray at the moment, so you can not really read too much into this result. But blimey, Leicester needed this, didn't they?
Yeah, definitely. And another thing, obviously, Maddison missed the previous game. He's obviously come back to this game, got on the score sheet again. I'm sure he's kind of obviously putting his hand up and making himself known for the upcoming World Cup squad. And Leicester, particularly in his game, some of the goals they scored were brilliant, particularly the first one. Tillemans was ridiculous, really, how cleanly he struck that shot on the half volley. And it always looks better when it goes in off the woodwork as well, doesn't it? And it was the same in this case. But yeah, a few key players. I mean, we were talking about his Wout Faas. Obviously, we spoke about him before the game. He's actually come into this defence in Leicester and he's actually looked really good. You've got to say,
yeah,
a big well done to Leicester scouting department. Again, they seem to find these gems and at really good prices as well. So they're obviously they're doing something right. But yeah, Harvey Barnes, obviously that's 2-2 now as he scored in the last game as well. Another player who's obviously coming off of a couple of bad injuries actually, and last season his season was interrupted. He's coming and showing some really good form. So, I mean, obviously there was this panic stations with Leicester, and obviously Leicester fans were obviously demanding Rodgers to go. And, you know, I was saying, I don't know whether I really agree with that. We know they're so much better than what they're showing, and it's just a case of whether they can turn it around. And fair play to the Leicester board. Like, a lot of clubs wouldn't give him that time. Obviously, I don't want to say this is premature, because obviously it's on the back of a couple of wins against clubs that are obviously further down the table. But it's a start, and they've been convincing wins as well.
True.
So, you know, fair play to Brendan Rodgers, being able to turn it around. Jamie Vardy back on the score sheet as well. I'm sure they were, you know, really gunning for him to find the net, because he's actually struggled the last few weeks. But they can only go on, look on from here, and hopefully it will spur them into go on a run.
Yeah, you don't want to say too good to be relegated, but I think Leicester are one of those teams that you really can't see any of those players getting a team relegated at all. You know, there's stars across the starting 11 especially. So yeah, I think it's just a confidence thing for them. So fingers crossed they turn it around. But Wolves, on the other hand, I'm struggling to see what Wolves are doing this season. I really haven't got a clue. They've sacked their manager, and I still don't know what circumstances under which they've done that without having a replacement lined up almost straight away. So it looks a shambles for them. And I think the writing was on the wall for me when they decided to let Connor Cody go this season to Everton, because he was such a calming presence in their defence. And you could see the difference he's made to Everton already just by being alongside James Tarkowski in their back four. So yeah, Wolves look in disarray. They've got no strikers. They've got a Diego Costa tribute act, it seems like, up front, who's doing literally nothing except winding up the opposition. What the hell do Wolves do now? Because they look in trouble as well.
You know, they're actually quite easy on the eye up to a certain point. It's just that final third, they can't score goals. And it's hard to find what it is, because, you know, like I mentioned, they can play some good stuff. Obviously, they've got some really good players. You know, there's obviously a big Portuguese contingency there. I know they were linked with a few managers. They were linked with Amorim, I think, from Sporting as well. A name's been mentioned and been linked with the Villa job. But it's not looking like they're going to do anything now before the World Cup, or whether they are just scoping out and speaking to whoever they can. Obviously, they think they've got a chance of getting it, and that might be risky. I mean, it might be a smart play. We'll have to see who they obviously get in eventually. But I don't know. It's just it must be quite demoralising as a player to not really know what direction you're going in, what the board are doing about a manager, because surely that's not getting communicated to them about, you know, oh, we're doing this, or we're looking for. You can't see that happening. So it must be really demoralising as a player and sitting in that dressing room, wondering what's going to happen next, really.
I did anticipate they had a manager lined up, and I think that's the biggest shock for me, that they're kind of willing to sacrifice a bit of the season, because they're not going to put a string of results together with a temporary manager in charge. You know, it doesn't matter how good he is. He's only, what, the under-23 coach or something like that, who's been promoted temporarily. They need somebody who can take charge of this group of players and do it convincingly. And at the minute, they look lost. They don't know if they've got any plan. Well, one team that seems to have got their stuff together in terms of management, at least, is Aston Villa, because they've obviously got rid of Steven Gerrard midweek after a really, really awful loss to Fulham, it's fair to say. It's probably one of the worst games I've seen Villa play. They absolutely down tools, didn't they? And then a few days later, they go and beat Brentford 4-0 convincingly. Not just beat them 4-0 convincingly, but they had a layout of the team and, you know, the formation and the players in the right places. Everything seemed to click. And Danny Ings, we saw the best of him. Leon Bailey was on the score sheet. Even Ollie Watkins got on the score sheet. It felt like he managed to accommodate all these brilliant players in a system that just worked. And the players responded, didn't they? So fair play to Aaron Danks, the caretaker manager. He's done a really good job in his first game. Just goes to show how maybe Steven Gerrard wasn't seen as popularly as people thought he might have been from the inside of the club, hey?
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing we spoke about, isn't it, in the last few weeks, whether there was a bit of some sort of mutiny amongst the group and whether there was some sort of division. Obviously, he had a few disagreements with some of the players. There was the whole fiasco surrounding the captaincy as well. He called out a couple of players in public, which obviously we've seen, you know, the sort of impact that can have on players and teams in the past. So, yeah, I'm surprised they played as well as they did. I mean, they actually looked really good. They were a breath of fresh air going forward. I think the main thing for me was the tempo, the passing, and kind of on and off the ball. The intensity was, you know, a million miles better than what we'd seen the last few weeks in particular. It could be a case of playing for their careers in a place in that team, because
maybe
they've got to be thinking now, who's coming into this team as manager? I've got to, you know, stake my claim, and I've really got to turn up now, because at the end of the day, the next manager that comes in doesn't want players in there who aren't going to give their all. And that's something that we saw from pretty much every single player who looked a lot better than what we've seen. Danny Ings, you know, looks a lot more like his former self. Brilliant couple of goals.
Yeah.
The first one really well worked for Leon Bailey from a corner. That was, mm-hmm. you know, really well worked, and something that we've just not really seen any sort of unity from Villa. There's been a lack of fight from them, and it's, you know, we saw the complete opposite in this game. And it'll be interesting to see, obviously, who they bring in. There's been a lot of murmurs, haven't there, about Pochettino. And
I think Pochettino is the optimistic one, isn't he, in Villa fans' eyes?
Yeah, I think they've got to go for somebody who's quite exciting, maybe a younger manager. If they're not going to be able to get hold of Pochettino, somebody who's just going to give them a little bit of, you know, excitement. We don't want anybody who's been around the block and seen as a safe option.
No.
You know, I'm sure, you know, they've had to put up with some bad appointments in the past, Villa fans. So I'm sure Miles will be hoping that this one's somebody he can support, and you know, the excitement will be coming back to Villa Park.
Yeah, I think he's mentioned actually already in private that he wants Pochettino for the job. And do you know what? The way that Villa played in this game and the way they were set up, it was like a 4-2-3-1 formation almost. And I think we said repeatedly, we don't know what a Gerrard team looks like. We don't know how he's going to accommodate all these different midfielders and forwards, especially, and how they're going to work, because the back four, back five picked itself. But he managed to get both Watkins and Ings in the team. Watkins out wide on the right, Bailey on the left as well. Buendia started, which Miles will be thrilled about. But for me, it was the midfield too. They had Ndonka and Douglas Luiz sitting in the middle and just screened the defence really well. They looked calm and professional and organised, and they just linked the play so well. So loads of reason to be optimistic. No place in the first 11 for Philip Coutinho, who was obviously like the golden child of Steven Gerrard. So I don't know if that's a sign of things to come. But it did feel like Gerrard was kind of accommodating Coutinho at times, didn't it? So in that note, I think this Villa looks like a kind of Villa that could climb the table quite easily with a few results strung together. Maybe someone like Pochettino will look at this version of Villa instead of what we've seen already this season and go, do you know what? That's a talented group of players. I can work with them. Yeah. Elsewhere in the Premier League, Everton beat Crystal Palace at home 3-0 to continue their revival under Frank Lampard, it seems. And they've leapfrogged Palace in the table to go to 11th now. So that's quite impressive for them. Man City beat Brighton 3-1 convincingly again. Erling Haaland getting a brace after his one game without a goal. It felt like he was well overdue at smashing some team, didn't it? And so it proved. Leeds 2, Fulham 3. Fulham climb into 7th in the league. A quick word on Fulham, actually, before we move on, Dave. They're looking right at home now. And I think the Premier League table after this many games is starting to look more like a true reflection, I think, of where the teams are. Fulham deserve to be a top 10 team. There's so many worse teams than them in the Premier League, isn't there? They look brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, you'd be very surprised now if if they had a turnaround in form. With, I know they've shipped a few goals here and there, but going forward, they've looked really well. It's been the complete opposite of the past. And when we've seen them come into the league, they've looked a bit frail, vulnerable. But they look like they really want to work for each other, these players. There's a real sense of unity and belief, really, in what they're doing. And they believe that they can win games, and they've been doing that. One of the keys for them has obviously been Alexander Mitrovic, who's been, you know, bang on form. And obviously, a lot of the acquisitions they've brought in, and I've got to mention Andreas Pereira, because he's got slated so much from United fans over
by you.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've known he's always had talent. He's got, and even the manager said he's got absolutely everything. It's just about piecing it together. And
yeah,
that's always been the case. He's always had a lot of talent. It's just, I just feel like he's played so many different positions. He's not really been able to knit it all together. And we're seeing what he's capable of. I think that's the main thing, is a lot of these players they've brought in, they're actually making a difference. They've shown that they can play in the Premier League. I think they're doing really well, and I'll be very surprised to see them in and around relegation, just going off how well they've played so far this season.
Just to finish up, Dave, I want to get your thoughts on hero, villain and goal of the week. So who have you gone for the hero of the week? I'm really interested what your thoughts are for this one.
I've actually gone for James Maddison. I just want to big up his performances, particularly in the last few weeks. I think he scored another brilliant goal. We've seen what he's all about. And I think a lot of it, especially with his goals, is he creates things out of nothing. He's one of those players. And I know a lot of people say you can't play in the same team as Grealish. England don't really play with a 10 in a sort of position, but he offers something different. And I think that's the main thing.
Fair shout. What about the villain then? Who are you going to pick for this one?
It's got to be Hugo Lloris for this week. He was obviously the culprit for the goal against, Wilson, who, I already mentioned, I think goalkeepers get a little bit too much protection. But if he'd have just got up straight away, I mean, he wasn't hurt. If he'd have just got up and just ran back into his goal, he might have had a chance of saving them. Yeah, it's almost like he expected the referee to blow his whistle in, you know, for a foul, which it wasn't a foul for me. So
interesting one for goal of the week then. Tell me who you've gone for, because there's a few pretty good goals this weekend.
I've already mentioned it's Tielemans. I thought that was the standout goal. You don't see many strikes like that. And like I mentioned, the way it just goes in off the post, the velocity of the shot was ridiculous, and just how cleanly he struck it.
Anyway, that's the end of this week's pod. Dave, thanks for joining me once again, mate. I'll take this moment again to please reiterate, stop what you're doing. See that little button at the bottom of the screen if you're watching on YouTube that says subscribe. Just hit that, because we are so close to hitting 100 subscribers on YouTube, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's a massive milestone for us. We've not been going that long. Barely even 2 years. So yeah, if you could just take that moment to just give us that little bit of gesture, especially if you've enjoyed what you've been listening to, that'd be amazing. But Dave, thanks for joining me once again. Hopefully I'll have Miles back with us next week, and I'll speak to you soon, guys. Cheers.